Good evening, friends. This is Horace Batchelor at the microphone, the inventor of the famous infodraw method for the treble chance. I have myself, with my own coupon entries, won 1,012 first treble chance top dividends. And my ingenious method can help you to win also.
Hello and welcome to the Sound of Football podcast. I'm Graham Sibley, and as usual, I'm joined by Jan Bilton.
Hello.
And Terry DeFellin.
Hello.
Well, club football came back this week, and I think everyone was quite relieved about it, weren't they?
I wasn't.
You weren't, no.
I wish it stayed gone.
Yes, well, sorry about that. But hey, Terry, I mean, it was quite a good weekend for you, wasn't it? A little disappointment with Dortmund, I suppose. But
I think a point at Schalke is probably half decent.
Yeah.
But that could have been worse. The big story, of course, was the bridge. Very happy with that.
Yes, of course.
Yeah. 10 minutes of injury time, though.
Yeah, I know.
Was there really?
Yeah. Just the 10 minutes of injury time.
Yeah, I was kind of getting your anxiety. I was in the middle of Ashdown Forest having an ice cream at the time, so actually a bit more relaxed.
A bit more serene. I can well imagine. No, I was at home watching it on Soccer Saturday. I didn't bother to get a stream up for it because I was too nervous.
Just thought we were going to get battered.
I thought that we could do it, though. Yeah. Half time. I wouldn't go so far as to say that I was confident, but there was genuine belief that that team could hold out for 45 minutes against Chelsea because of the improvements that they've made over the last few games and the clean sheets that they make. They've become suddenly very good at defending. So I was confident.
Confident,
yeah,
eh?
Yeah, I was confident. And,
how confident were you?
I wasn't confident enough to put any money on
it. No?
No. Sadly. Actually, I don't think I would have got shockingly long odds for putting money on it for 45 minutes.
Yeah. But it's funny how not too long ago we wouldn't have been able to put a bet on like that from the comfort of your sofa.
No.
But now you can. Now you can have a sudden whim of saying, oh, I bet they go on and win now, and actually put your money where your mouth is, can't you?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
And I reckon that many a bookie has profited from such a whim as well.
They all profit.
Yeah, indeed.
Well, we're going to talk a bit about gambling on football. Not too serious, not getting too in-depth about the whys and wherefores about it and the rights and wrongs of it. A bit more about how it stretches the game out and about other forms of having a flutter on the game and how long it goes back, because it does go back a long way, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Into what is seemingly harmless things like spot the ball and the football pools. So we're going to have a little talk about that today. And then we're going to go on and talk about games about football, because you don't have to have a bet on games that surround the game, do you?
No, you know, you don't have to spend money to enjoy football.
No. You can get it for free. Always remember that, listeners. Football can be free, especially if you go out and play it yourself. Like, you know, you don't have to spend any money on it. Jan, okay, now, you're not a stranger to ACCAs, are you?
I have the occasional flutter.
Yeah, you have the occasional one, don't you? Yeah,
the occasional one, now the microphone's on.
It's all right. She doesn't listen to this type of stuff.
It's quite safe. You're a few minutes in now. You know, it's only the stuff really that begins that's in the first couple of minutes. You know. Yeah. After that, they've settled down. And they, I've had enough of this. Yeah. I'm off. I'm going to do something else. Right, yeah, you have an accumulator. You know, it's probably only a couple of quid, isn't it? So
yeah, I normally just put about a tenner into my Sky Bet account a month.
Oh, a month. Okay.
Thank you. And then bet, you know, the odd pound or 50 pence here and there. It's not, for me, it's not necessarily about coming away with bucketloads of cash, because it's hard to get that if you're betting such small amounts, but it's just the thrill of trying to get it right, really, and get make your winnings back, maybe, and then have another go, and then inevitably lose it.
Because you also have a fantasy football team, don't you?
Yes.
And you actually play that quite regularly. You're actually still actually actively involved, even though it's April. Most people don't look at it past October, do they?
I'm probably at 70% now. Admit.
Well, that's pretty good.
I'm nearly in my flip-flops. It's nearly the summer.
Yeah, I
do. We do one at work, and there's because we're quite a large organisation now, and there's quite a lot of people interested in it. There's about 75 people in the league, which is quite a lot, and because we all kind of more or less know each other, it makes it a bit more interesting. I'm 17th at the moment.
Oh, right. Have you got a suitably amusing play on words pun for your team then?
Yes.
Excellent, excellent. It's, and it is
Cantier's Inferno.
Yes.
Ooh,
like it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, I'll bet there's quite a few of those.
Yeah, I'm sure there are. Yeah.
But hey, good one.
Yeah, good, that's
one.
A good one. I was pleased with that one. Yeah. Yeah. Cantier's Inferno.
Yeah. I'm a bit more lowbrow. I'd have gone for Cantier's Peak.
Yeah, and I think you both have been right, really. I'm not going to be part of any sort of like I'm not going to spend the next 5 minutes debating whether or not who's got the funnier one there.
But that's a shame.
Yeah. Well, maybe if you press the red button now, you will hear it go on about 10 or 20 minutes as I struggle to try and figure out another one to go on top of that. But maybe it'll be the bumper at the end. Maybe I'll just come on there tomorrow morning, actually. I'll set this all up again and I'll just record it as if, and then I'll just drop it in. So if you could just laugh now and just say, like, oh, that's great.
Yeah. Oh, that's definitely the best one.
Excellent.
Definitely the best one.
Excellent. Excellent. That'll work fine, I'm sure. Yeah, Terry, what's your experience of fantasy football? Ever done that?
I did a bit of it. I did a bit with you, actually.
We had
a couple of seasons. We had a before the internet.
Yes.
We had a team going, didn't we?
Yeah,
a league going, I should say.
Yeah, that was.
But it was quite high. It was quite a lot of work because there was no internet to help. Do it. I think you were the one who actually ended up doing all the working out and the transfers and stuff. But we got together for.
Yeah, we had the old bid and everything.
Yeah,
like
which
we had the auction type one, not the sort of like one where you can all pick, duplicate all your players.
Also, it was you had to have a unique.
Yeah,
set
it was
of
only
players.
A few of us. It was only not.
Yeah, even, I mean, I won the second year because I've spent over half my budget on Alan Shearer, and then just like populated the rest with everyone else, and it was Alan Shearer's goals that saw me through.
Wow,
I got Ian Wright for a song as well, which was. Pretty decent as well. So, I that's pretty much it.
Yeah,
I liked that. I think probably the social element to it I liked. I've never taken to it on the internet. Yeah. I must have about a dozen fantasy accounts and teams spread across the internet.
PremierLeague.co.uk,
Premier League, Yahoo, you know, and they've never been looked at once they've been set up. I go, I'm going to do it this year, and I'm going to really, really stick at it. I really mean it this time. Really mean it this time. I set everything up. Like, yeah, him there. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. And then that's it.
Have you never been tempted to do one for the Bundesliga?
No, actually, do you know what? I've never done a Bundesliga fantasy team.
Obviously, must do it.
I've done predictor games.
Right.
The Tippspiel is a big thing.
Is that
in Deutschland? Yeah, they love their Tippspiel.
Is that?
So their... it's just you choose a game with who wins, and you get points according to your result. So you get points, you get maximum points for a correct score, and then you get lesser maximum points for a win or for correct prediction of result.
Mm.
And it goes like that. And I've done moderately well at that when I've sort of like remembered to do it. And I think I did an entire season of that fairly recently. That's a good one.
Yeah.
I like those ones. You just sit down at the beginning of the weekend and just go through it. I'm sure you could put a lot of thought into it. But
yeah.
I mean, if you're like me and you tend to immerse yourself in that league anyway, or in any league, then you don't have to do that much thinking because you've already done your thinking beforehand.
Going back a bit, the games that used to be surround football when we were younger, obviously you had the pools. And Spot the Ball, which I presume are still going. I mean, I know
somewhere,
the pools are still going, and I presume Spot the Ball, someone out there is still...
Sportech, they're called. They're what Littlewoods and some of the other companies that were around at the time effectively morphed into. And so they're still doing Spot the Ball. I believe they do the pools as well.
I assume they must have been really hammered when the National Lottery came around, because, the National Lottery's been around for... Over
since
20
the
years
early 90s,
now,
yeah.
Yeah. So, well, almost 25 years now. Then, so and of course, before that, we didn't have any lotteries where people could win £1 million. It was like if you wanted to win a grand and a new Morris Marina, you had to go on 3-2-1, didn't you?
Or a speedboat.
Or a speedboat. Yeah, you go on
bullseye.
Yeah. Speedboat or a caravan. Yeah, yeah. And when you lost, it was a car, obviously. Oh yeah, it was a car. Yeah, usually a Mini Metro or something like that.
Ah, the Mini Metro, yeah.
It's my first car, Mini Metro.
Was it?
It was
Champagne Beige.
Did you win on
Bullseye?
I did. I did, yeah. Yeah, I wanted the speedboat, but you know, it wasn't very good for the commute between Derby and Sunderland.
Yeah. Stay out the black and in the red. You don't get nothing for two in a bed. My dad used to play the pools. And he used to sit down there and actually do it rather than just have the same numbers every week. He would actually sit down there and try and win and
try and implement some skill into proceedings.
Try and put, and I suppose that's the thing about it was that it was actually a game ostensibly of skill.
Mm. It's the same with the Acca, isn't it?
Yeah,
is that you fancy yourself as a tipster?
Yeah,
and so you know you convince yourself that there's an element of skill in it until it obviously doesn't come in, and then you say, oh, it's all blowing luck anyway.
You had to pick out a lot of draws, didn't you?
You could pick, say, a dozen matches. Obviously, every extra match you put, you sort of doubled your bets up. But it was ostensibly you had to pick eight matches that were going to be score draws. You got 3 points for a score draw, 2 points for a no score draw. You got 1.5 points for an away win and 1 point for a home win. So it was weighted, and if there were only eight score draws out of the 50 odd that they would list, then it would be a jackpot, possible jackpot. Sometimes, of course, you'd get more or less. There would be a little thing after the final score when they give you the pools information and say, like, well, there's been 7 score draws and 3 no score draws.
Well, they used to count the score draws.
There used to be a counter at the side.
On the video printer.
Yeah.
I don't know if they still do that.
No.
I'm not sure that they do. But when the video printer or the teleprinter, if you want to go back a very long way, when it was a clacky clacky teleprinter, and it would have this little analog dial that would go up every time there was a score draw, and you go click up to 2. And then, as you say, and then after they've done all the, then they do the classified results, then they do the tables, and at the end of the tables, then Frank Barth or Des Lynam would do the pools forecast and say and whether or not there was likely to be a possible jackpot. People would get excited. How did they collect all that data? Because they didn't have computers.
Well, they had people there phoning in.
So they had people there phoning. Yeah, yeah, it's amazing.
So it was. I presume even because they went down all the way down there, that they would have some local person.
You bought your coupon from a bookies or from a newsagents, and do you remember?
There was a man who used to come round. A bloke used to come round, and you had door to door gambling.
Yes.
Someone would come round and would drop the leaflet off in the start of the week. Then you'd fill it in, and
then you come and
collect it. That was it. You know, he'd give you next week's one when he'd pick up.
Right, okay.
Yeah, and then he'd also pay out winnings because if you've got 18 points or 19 points, you might get a few quid back. Yeah. So that was sort of like enough to sort of keep you going and keep your interest going. But basically, this thing started sort of between the wars, and it was a cheap form of gambling. One of the hangovers of when the pools were set up is something that you and I have come across, and bloggers have come across over the last few years, whereby the Football League in this country, and now the Premier League as well, own the copyright to the fixture list.
Yeah.
And this was set up basically for football to get some money out of the pools company, because the pools companies, they were selling their coupons outside grounds, but the Football League weren't getting any of the money back. They weren't getting anything out of it.
Right.
So like, they didn't advertise, or there was no such thing as pitch advertising. There's no shirt sponsors or anything like that.
I didn't realise that.
So what they did, this is what the Football League did. The Football League said, right, well, we're going to copyright this now, and you have to have a licence which you have to pay for to print the fixture list. And this is why they got money. This is how they got money out of the football pools companies. But also, as well, they managed to get some money out of the newspapers as well.
But it continues to this day.
It still goes on. Yeah, and if you're a blogger and you publish the Football League listings in July when they come out, or June when they come out, then you are in breach of copyright.
Mm, you're likely to get a bill.
Yeah, you are likely to get a bill or a cease and desist order from the league.
Wow.
Yeah, I had a frank exchange of views with the marketing dweeb at the Premier League 1 year, when he was getting a bit high and mighty about bloggers putting up the football fixtures. And yes, he was a complete and utter tosser about it. It really was.
He started banging on about solidarity payments because he says that some of the money that comes from the from, yeah. from that from the fixtures.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
it,
yeah.
It goes to solidarity payments. So yeah. He was effectively attempting to blackmail, you know, yeah. the courts, I think it was, yeah. into finding in their favour so that,
yeah.
because, oh, it would be a shame because, you know, that's where the...
Saying that that's where all the money goes to grassroots, you know, when they're yeah. earning God knows how many billions Absolutely. Of pounds a year. Mm. And trying to grab more money off people who are actually advertising their product.
Yeah.
It's yes, it is absurd to think that any other industry wouldn't get away with charging for their listing.
God, no. I remember when it's we crazy. Did, I think, was it for 2006 or was it? I got in touch with FIFA when we for one tournament about doing wall charts and about how if there was any problem with that, with if they had copyright. And this guy would answer me like as if I was mad about why on earth would we try and stop you from advertising our matches. It's like, why would we try? What he couldn't even understand what I was going on about. And just
maybe it's because you didn't offer him any money.
Yeah, it probably was. It probably was.
So you can't get FIFA.
And actually, they thought, God, we missed a trick here. God, they think we're corrupt.
That's. It's moderately surprising given how easily FIFA find it to extract money from people
yeah.
traditionally, that they didn't do that. But yeah, no, I mean that's the correct attitude. Why on earth would you
yeah.
charge people for publishing your listings?
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a funny word. But I didn't realise that it was because of the pools. I didn't realise that was, no. that was the origin of it. So I've learned something
yeah.
today.
So yeah, that's something for people to look up. And I don't know what international listeners might think of this. I mean, there might be some equivalent of it there. Australian listeners might be interested to know that during the summer, when obviously when our football took a break, yeah. the pools used to go over yeah, and do right. the Australian football matches.
Yes.
So Croydon would come up on the final score. Yeah, they would just list out the draws, wouldn't they?
But, yeah. Yes, I'd forgotten about that. But yeah, I don't know. I don't. Do they still do the Australian teams now, or do you think
I honestly
they,
don't know.
No,
I know
they do. Newspapers anymore.
They've recently started. I know it doesn't enjoy anything like the media profile that it used to have. The pools, as I said, it used to be entrenched in the BBC. Yeah. But once the National Lottery came along,
yeah.
blew all that out of the water. Didn't put these guys out of business, but certainly, you know, the BBC switched their focus to the lottery itself. They
yeah.
cover the lottery and they cover the live draws. And I don't know whether or not it was an instantaneous drop-off, but I have very little recollection after a certain point of the pools being a thing.
Yeah.
Well, certainly the spot the ball fell off massively. So at its height, there were 3 million people a week playing that.
Wow.
And
how many people actually won it, I wonder?
And, well, this is what's interesting. Now only 14,000 people a week play it, and there hasn't been a winner since 2004.
Can you explain Spot the Ball racket. To people who are under 35?
Yeah, so Spot the Ball was a picture of some action where invariably the
it was a badly photoshopped cutout, wasn't it? Really, because you'd have like the it would be from sort of pitch level looking upwards.
Yes,
and it would usually be something like an aerial challenge or something like that.
It was definitely an action shot.
Yeah,
and the players would be looking in different directions.
Yeah. Norman Hunter and Franny Lee would be going up for the same ball, wouldn't they, or something like that.
The keeper would be scrambling around somewhere, maybe a bit lower down, so you didn't really know where the ball was.
It was in the grid, though, wasn't it?
Yeah.
They posed a grid over the top of it, right?
No.
You got your little crosses, and you find the
crosses. Yeah.
So, yeah, it was completely, well, not random, okay. but it wasn't as ordered as having a grid on it. What's interesting, though, is that probably the reason why no one no one's won it for such a long time is that even now the there is a decision made on where the ball is, and it's not where the ball is. So there's two former footballers, Ian Callaghan and David Sadler, of Liverpool and Manchester United respectively, who are sent or get together somehow, see the same image that you and I would see minus the ball. And they decide where that ball's going to be.
Wow!
And then
so they don't. So
no,
they don't see the
nope.
ball.
They don't know. They don't know it either.
It has no basis in reality.
Yeah, so yeah.
Do we know? Do we know if the ball was ever there to begin with? Then
there's got to be some ball there.
But within shot, though. Yeah, obviously, yes. I appreciate that they were at a football match, and you know there would have been a ball, but within shot. Is it conceivable that there might have been some pictures in which the ball was actually not there at all?
Well, it's conceivable, isn't it? Because it doesn't matter where the ball is in that shot, because it's down to them to
decide
where it is.
Generally, attention does seem to be... You, it does lend itself. You do sort of. This is what always used to get me about Spot the Ball, because you used to see the result used to be in the Sunday papers of last week's Spot the Ball, and you'd see the X where it was. If you tried to use logic and thought, well, like, follow the eyes, see where the action go, see where they're jumping, and it would not be anywhere near where you would have thought. This is the Goldilocks zone. This is where we're going to put all your X's. Put all your X's in one basket.
Yeah. So did these guys, when did they actually make this decision? Was it before they published the picture, or was it after they published the picture?
They get it before.
Right.
Yeah.
So the location of the ball, is determined before they publish. Right.
Yes. Okay. Yes. Yes.
So there's no possibility of collusion or slipping a Mickey to
collusion.
Collusion.
So that's Spot the Ball.
It's amazing how that can still. I'm surprised there's not a modern version of it now. Actually, maybe we can come up with something. Something a bit more 21st century.
Yeah.
Sometime. Maybe that's something that the listeners can come up with as well.
Hmm.
Yeah. Get on to it, R&D. Come on. Going back to the polls, though, it's interesting how we say that it used to have this thing where the BBC would be telling you the scores and having the polls values there, telling you the forecast of whether or not it will be a jackpot that week. It reminds me a bit of the way that horse racing is presented, because obviously horse racing is all about, and always has been, about giving the fixed odds on the starting prices.
Mm.
The winner was 4-1 favourite. So it's totally linked to gambling. Of course, we've all known that.
Yeah.
But that's part of the presentation of it. And it's something that football, for me, when I was growing up, that was linked with the pools as well. But now it's not. And now it's sort of grown out into this more sort of multi-market, fixed odds, spread betting.
In-play markets,
yeah. And Asian handicaps, what have you. If you want to bet on absolutely anything on football now, you can do. And as we said earlier, if you want to suddenly show how smart you are at halftime and put your money where your mouth is, you can do. You say you put £10 into your app, which makes it very interesting, because obviously you carry the means of gambling around with you all the time, don't you?
Yeah.
So it's there whenever you want to. You can be at the mat. You can be down at Whiteleaf and think, I fancy.
I'll have a bang on that. It doesn't work with my accent, that, does it?
It's something to work on.
You do carry it everywhere with you. And I suppose for some people that might be a problem. But it does make it more interesting. I got a massive 30 quid maybe over the end of last season when Duncan Watmore came on for Sunderland and scored a goal. And he came on. I thought, he might as well get the next goal. Why not? And he did. And I got 30 quid. I was over the moon. Massively over the moon.
Yeah.
And I've probably spent probably a lot more than the 30 quid with Sky Bet in that time, because obviously the bookie always wins. But I kind of like that kind of the fact that it can be quite spontaneous, and there are more than just the score outcome of the game you can have a go at.
It has become quite integrated to football now. I know a lot of sports now are relying on the betting industry now, because, well, ever since the cigarette advertising ban, a lot of sports almost went to the wall. Snooker had real problems after that ban came in. It was only really when gambling was deregulated in this country that it became possible for gambling companies to sponsor clubs and events. We got to a stage now where half the teams in the Premier League are now sponsored by betting companies from all over the world.
Yeah. Absolutely, and you get adverts for betting companies dominating, picking up
every channel,
all the airtime, all around those football matches.
Yeah,
when I watch television that isn't football, I'm struck by how few gambling adverts there are.
Well,
maybe the odd casino, or bingo, depending on the show I'm watching.
What time of day?
Or what time of day?
Yeah,
yeah. It's quite pervasive. It's pretty much everywhere.
Yeah.
I mean, the relaxing of the gambling laws, I don't know whether or not it was a deliberate thing, but it came some years after the tightening of the tobacco laws. But it might well be that there was, the government were under a degree of pressure to do so from sporting events such as snooker, and perhaps broadcasters saying, you know, we these events need sponsorship and these gambling companies stand ready to step into the breach. We need a bit of, you know.
Interestingly, I think it's actually another offshoot of when the National Lottery started, because I think it was this whole thing about how businesses had a revenue stream almost taken away from them, and because everyone was gambling on this government sponsored.
Yeah, certainly. If you remember from before the lottery, bookies,
yeah,
the shops, they were boarded, effectively boarded up.
Mm. Yeah.
They'd have pictures of sportsmen, playing sport, but you couldn't see inside them.
Yeah, you still can't. Really.
And they're still to an extent, have that. Although you can, you know, but there was a time when that was relaxed.
Yeah,
it hasn't changed much now. But you can still see. But at one point you couldn't. It was frankly, it was like they were like sex shops. They were completely boarded up.
They were smoke filled as well, weren't they? So
yes, they were very much akin to walking into a lung. And magical places, by the way. and particularly to a, you know, inquisitive young boy, you know, ooh, what goes on in there?
I still find the fact that they still have the stubby little pens in there. Like,
yes.
It's quite sort of heartening to know that some things don't change.
There's a bookies. I used to work in the city, and there's a bookies just around the corner from my office, which, and there's quite a few of them actually in the city, which are in the basement. So you walk down the stairs to go to them.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Grotty.
Me and my boss.
Secret knocks.
Me and my boss used to go down there every Friday lunchtime to place a Bundesliga acca. Good times.
It's funny, isn't it, that some of the companies, the gambling companies that are around now, have all got really kind of cool internet-y names, haven't they? and they sound really good. I mean, even, you know, like Paddy Power and things like that. They sound... Oh, they're all right. They've got it's run by a guy called Paddy.
That's the name of the bloke, isn't it?
Yeah, I know, but the point is that when I see an advert for Ladbrokes, advertising exactly the same services, I just go, oof, grotty.
Yeah.
Oh,
but
really?
It's just because my mind, I associate seeing, you know, their brand name with exactly what you've just described. So in my mind, I would never have that on my phone, because if someone saw that on my phone, they'd just go, what's an idiot are you? Oh, I didn't know Yam was like that.
Do you know what? I get the same with William Hill.
Yeah.
Because William Hill has a very sort of similar font style to Rothmans.
Yes.
And I always often think, and I think William Hill sponsors books as well, don't they? So the Rothmans yearbook used to be, it probably still is, isn't it?
William Hill, it's now the Sky Sports yearbook, of course. But
And I think that sort of gets into my head as well. So, that's smoky old betting shops, the fun new betting shops that we go to now with those wonderful little machines in the corner that you just
you put just keep
your life savings.
Please swipe deeds for your mortgage.
We do have to say that the whole line of when the fun stop is really just playing down something that is quite a serious problem for people. So it's like saying to a smoker, when you get cancer, stop.
Yeah.
I know, because it's the message of the gambling companies, because they are self-regulating at the moment.
Yes.
At the moment, so they don't have government.
I mean, it'd be interesting to see if that changes. I mean, I don't think it will change over the years. I think they'll continue. Yeah. If anything, they may even enjoy even less regulation, particularly as our government finds itself embroiled in other affairs. So, the when the fun stop campaign, really, as you say, it's a sort of lip service to the numerous social issues that arise from excessive gambling.
Mm.
I think it's really just a token gesture, to be honest with you, particularly, you know, with some of the adverts at the end of it where they say, when the fun stop, you know, they say just, you know, when you're reading out terms and conditions after an advert, you know, subject status, we may take away your house, we are coming for your daughter, it's a reluctant gesture, I think.
I think what we've seen though is that with mobile apps, you've got that involvement with football, and I suppose that really makes it sort of quite easy for people who love football and really get into it to sort of just hit it and just go straight away. I mean, because I spend whenever there's a game on, I've got Flash Scores in my hand so I can see what's going on everywhere.
Everywhere else, yeah.
Yeah. Mm. But it may as well be a betting app that I've got somewhere else and telling me what I can do somewhere else. Mm. Like, do I think someone's going to get a hat trick? Or...
Well, it's interesting that you raised that whole thing with flash scores. The thing that I regularly think about, I think I've mentioned to you guys a couple of times, is I don't buy newspapers anymore. And one of my rituals on a Sunday morning would be to go and buy a newspaper for the sports section, head straight to the sports section.
For the results page.
I wouldn't even bother reading the reports straight away. I'd go straight to the big one-sheet result page, and then I would just pour through the results for all four divisions.
Yeah.
And a bit of Scotland and a bit of the conference, and then that little box in the corner which had the foreign leagues.
Yeah, foreign league.
I don't imagine that the format's changed that. In fact, I know it hasn't changed that much. Yeah. I bought one recently because I was curious to see if it had changed.
Yeah.
And it's something that I think I miss about my football experience, my sort of like your secondary football experience. I mean, you know, it's fine. I have flash scores. And so I guess I absorb that information in a different way. But the thing is, I pick the scores and the leagues that I'm interested in, set up my alerts accordingly. Mm. But what the one sheet did was that it kind of compelled me to look at the entire league as a whole. And I would be able to tell you where a team, who will be top of the Division 3, who would be mid-table. I could probably, someone could name a team and I could probably tell you where they were in the league. Maybe not to the actual placement.
But roughly,
pretty much. Yeah. I might even be able to tell you a few things about their top scorer or who their best player was. What the newspapers gave you was it kind of forced you into knowledge that is useful, even if you're not necessarily inclined to find it so.
Mm.
Whereas the internet allows you to choose what you want to, what knowledge you want to absorb, and then you end up not knowing anything about stuff that maybe you should do as a football fan. I think it is a bit of a shame. Maybe I'm being nostalgic, but I think sometimes I embarrass myself when I think of who's top of League Two.
Who's in League Two.
And even who's in League Two. Yeah. And I don't know.
Yeah.
A lot of it is because my football tastes have changed and I follow a lot more European football than I did because the internet's come along and because, you know, multi-channel TV and pay TV has come along and it's all there.
You know? You also support a team that's also four tiers below that as well.
And true enough, yeah.
Yeah.
But I think it's a shame that you don't necessarily have that. It's simply the way things are. It's no big deal. But I wonder how popular it would be if you brought those sheets, if you created digital versions of those sheets.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's an interesting point because I think a lot of people would say, oh, well, you know, it's because these games don't get enough coverage on the telly. Well, they used to get zero coverage on the telly and radio. Well, only local radio really would be covering them.
Yeah.
So it's nothing to do with that. It's more about the fact that, obviously, so much more attention is focused towards Premier League and foreign leagues because, obviously, the TV companies love to buy
them.
lots and lots of rights. And TV companies want to offer a lot of...
Mm. And they're cheap as well, the TV companies. The foreign leagues are cheap, whereas the domestic leagues, even lower tier ones, will be expensive to cover.
I used to love that as well with the sheet. But I think as well, looking back, you're right. You'd have an even smaller section for the Scottish leagues, and then you'd have probably nothing apart from when you, as you said, you switched to the Australian stuff in the summer, which was always bizarre. Poring over that sheet, watching how Adelaide did, and I'm like, I don't care about any of this. You know, it sounded like an old man, but it was a lot simpler back then because you just kind of looking at what was on that one page. And now, you know, I use Who Scored. That's a brilliant app.
Yeah.
But there's so much information in that.
Yeah.
It just kills me. And I think what I find it useful just to be able to pick and choose what I want to be alerted about and what is going on, because if I just try to go through that app or any app like it to kind of go, oh, what's happening there? What's happening in all the English leagues? What's happening in Scotland? Right, okay, let's nip across to Germany and all that type of stuff. My brain would just start bleeding. And there's not enough hours in the day to do all that type of stuff. You still need to eat and go to work and things like that.
I think that there's still a role in media in general, but in football specifically, for curating information and curating this data. Mm. So not necessarily making it all available. Well, obviously you do make it all available to everybody, but there's still a lot in informed people saying, this is interesting, you should look at this.
Yeah.
This is valuable to you, you should look at this. You'll get a lot of social currency if you know this. You may not think it, but you will. Mm. And trusting those curators to be able to do that. Mm. And that's something that the newspapers were able to do. Mm. They'd say, you want to know who's 13th in League Two? You do. You don't, I know you don't think you do, but you do.
You do
want. So I'm going to give you a nice big sheet, and it's going to tell you everything you need to know about the weekend's football or the Saturday's football in one big thing, and then that's fine. And then you've got all your social currency that you need. So when you go down the pub and talk to your mates about it midweek, then you know you can have, you've got your basis for your conversation.
And speaking of football that you should know about, it's your turn to do the box set this weekend, isn't
it? Yes, indeed.
I
must confess, I haven't actually had a chance to look too closely at what's coming up, but Bayern Munich versus Dortmund is on this week.
Right.
Mm. And it's on, I think it's on 5:30 on BT. So shall be writing a preview of that. tinyletter.com/soundoffootball for your weekend box set.
Yes.
Seven previews. Matches for the weekend of the weekend that you should watch, curated by me.
So, yes, basically what Terry will be watching from Friday to Sunday.
Yes.
Now, we got some good feedback from our previous pod. That's all up on our Facebook page. So if you want to get along there, thank you, Andre, for putting in quite a big piece of text. But we do love these long pieces of text that people are putting in on the Facebook. Mm. They're like mini blogs in there now. There's quite often now a good 200-word like missive in there.
They're interacting with each other as well now. Yeah. It's like a discussion board.
And I don't like that.
Stop that. Yeah,
we want to nip that in the bud straight away.
Yeah.
We're not a community.
No, we're not a community. And we won't bail you out if someone's nasty to you.
We're not going to moderate.
No.
Oh, God, no, I didn't sign up for that.
No.
Oh,
none
no.
of us did.
No, stop.
None of us did.
You're right. Yeah. Stop talking to each other.
Stop that. Stop that right away. Okay.
Just tell us how great we are.
Yeah, that's tell other people how great we are.
That's probably
what.
No, no, just tell us how great we are. That's
not
fun.
How it works. Come on.
Sorry, just ignore me.
Right, okay, so while we go off and discuss what our actual marketing strategy is going to be, I think what we have now is to say thanks very much for listening. But from me, Graham Sibley, from Jan Bilton, and from Tony Fulton, it's goodbye.
Goodbye.
You can contact us through our website, sofpodcast.com, via Twitter, @soundoffootball, or on facebook.com/soundoffootball.
Nearly 300 podcasts, and now he wants to talk marketing.